Hey, today we're continuing about understanding the reasonableness of our faith and how reasonable it is to believe in the existence of God and that the Bible is divinely inspired in His Word and that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And one, we're at the talking about the Bible and how do I know I can rely on it? And one of the strongest, in my mind, the strongest evidence that the Bible is divinely inspired is the fulfillment of biblical prophecies. And we talked a little bit last week how many of the prophecies had to do with nations and cities and so forth. But Daniel had some interesting ones. One about the, statue. I'm going to call it a statue. And the one about the 70 weeks, and then another that had some more insight with the statue part. So what this amounts to is God is revealing the history of the world, the empires of the world, in about around 603 B.C. is when he started this. You remember the story of Jesus and the woman at the well? What did she run back to town and say? Remember? Just generally. Yeah, who told me everything about myself? Well, that's what God's been doing from day one, is revealing things. And these three events in Daniel are awesome. It's predicting world history before it even happened. Not predicting. That's a bad word. He's telling how world history is going to unfold. And it's remarkable. Daniel, the second chapter. Daniel is a Jew. He's captive. He was taken captive as a young man. And he was put in Nebuchadnezzar's court and brought up to be an official, a servant of the king. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and it troubled him very much. And he wanted to know what that dream meant. And so he went to all the wise men. They couldn't help him. Someone said, hey, what about Daniel? Remember Daniel. Daniel 2, beginning in verse 27. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. And so Daniel didn't even ask what the vision was. He said, here's what your dream was. Thou, O king, verse 31, chapter 2, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible, or awesome. The image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Verse 34. Thou sawest till a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron the clay, the brass the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So, sometimes it's best to have a visual picture along with the, and I'm not an artist,
But
so he saw something that was similar to this in form. Head was gold. The arms and breast were silver. The midsection and thighs were brass. The legs were iron. And the feet, iron mixed with clay. What do you notice about these elements? Yeah. The most valuable is the gold. The silver is less. The brass is less. The iron is less. And the iron mixed with clay is probably worthless. Really. So this was what he saw, and he troubled us. Well, what does it mean? In verse 36, second chapter. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings. For the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the fields and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thy hand, and he hath and hath made thee ruler over all of them. So the first world empire is defined, the Babylonian Empire. And I'm not going to go there in turn, but in the seventh chapter, he has another vision, which is a corollary to this, and just adds more description. In the seventh chapter, it's also gold, but it's also a lion with eagle's wings. Now, what's significant about the lion? He's the king of beasts. He really is. What's significant about the eagle? The most magnificent of the fowl, birds of the air. So here you have gold, you have the majesty of the lion, the king of the beasts. You have the majesty of the eagle, the king of the fowl, of the birds. So that's how he describes them. That's the first world empire. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee. And that's not described, but you can turn to any world history book. Any world history book. You can Google it and talk about the great empires of the Western world. And these are what they'll say. Babylon was the first. The second was the Medes and Persians. Medo-Persian Empire. In Daniel chapter 7, this is described as a bear. Significant thing about a bear is that they're very strong, very powerful, and very temperamental. When they're hungry, or when you mess with their what belongs to them, their children, they are very fierce. Chapter 3, it's called, or chapter 7, where it talks about the bear. He raises up on one side, and in his teeth are three ribs. So they're a fierce, devouring thing. And it's interesting that he raised up on one side. It's also interesting, two arms, Medo-Persian. One, and he raises up on one side in chapter 7. One was stronger than the other. And the Medes were the dominant empire at this time. And I'll go into that just a little bit later. Verse 29, and a third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And this was actually mentioned in later chapters, but it's the Greek Empire. And if you go to any world history book, when they start talking world history in school or anything, you will find these as the three major empires of the world. This was also, it's made of brass. And it, in the seventh chapter, is described as a leopard with four wings. What's significant about a leopard? They can run about 50 miles an hour for a short period of time. Up to 50 miles an hour. Average is probably 35 to 45, but that's getting right on. For short periods of time. If you know anything about the Greek Empire, and we'll talk a little bit about it, it came up fast, furious, conquered the world, and in 13 years it was over. So it was swift and sure and elusive and agile. That's the leopard. And those things all describe the Greek kingdom. You know, when Alexander the Great defeated the Persians had an army of up to 200,000 men. You know how many Greek soldiers Alexander had? A maximum of 35,000. But he used his cunning, his speed, his quick decision making, his ability to strike, to see an opportunity and strike quickly and decisively, and he conquered the world. What the known world. It was amazing. And the fourth beast and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. And this is by far the most significant one, and it's the one most talked about in Daniel and also in the book of Revelation. The fourth kingdom is of iron, and that would be the Roman Empire. Can you, first of all, how many world empires existed after the Roman Empire that dominated the world? Now, isn't that one thing that's amazing? That at 600 BC, God gave a prophecy and said there will be four world empires that will dominate the known world. Now, that's just significant in itself. And all these little counter descriptions. One thing, it stood on two legs. So when the empire in the days of Constantine, there was actually two. There was an Eastern Empire in Rome and another in Constantinople. So that's interesting. When we look in chapter, well, let's go on. For as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And really, there's nothing in the world been like the Roman Empire. You know, it was awesome. It was just far-reaching, very dominant, iron rule, so forth. Verse 41, and whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, now, this is interesting. How many toes do we have? 10. And there's a weakness here, right? Clay mixed with anything is not very strong. In fact, it really don't mix at all. So, and whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. And there shall be in it of the strength of iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. So it was partly strong and partly weak. And as the feet, and as the toes of the feet were part iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. You really don't mix the two. They can be a conglomerate, but they don't really meld, you know, together. So that is interesting because when the Roman Empire began and as history unfolded, they were plagued by pagan invasion after pagan invasion after pagan invasion. And there were actually 10 distinct tribes that plagued the Roman Empire from the days of the Caesar till it finally fell at the hands of these barbarians in 453? I don't remember. Okay, 453, and then in 1453 or something. So they actually fell at the hands, yes.
You could, another way to look at it, possibly Nebuchadnezzar,
yep.
The bottom of the hole. Why did I say the hole? Because he was the one king who was not at the Vatican crown. That was a miry clay, and the iron was mixed together. They were mixed together because the Vatican was able to crown the king.
Yeah. And Chad's up talking about things. And Chad's talking about, if you look in the book of Revelations, you know, in the years 1800 to about 1848, Napoleon started it. But in the beginning, when Rome was still a pagan empire, there were 10 barbarian tribes which caused its downfall. You know, some of them you would know, the Franks, the Burgundians, the Lombards, the Bavarians, the Ostrogoths, the Vandals. You've heard of the Vandals. The Visigoths, the Alemann Franks, and the Anglo-Saxons, and so there were 10 of those that actually caused the demise of the empire. When Chad's talking about, and the beginning of the Reformation and Restoration, there were 10 crowns that owed their existence. All those things to the Pope. The Pope crowned them. It was with his favor and at his ordination that they existed. And these 10 kingdoms actually led to the downfall, culminating with Napoleon of France. These 10 nations, 10 crowns, 10 kingdoms that made up the iron mixed with clay was England, France, Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, Spain, Austria, Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands. And you can read that in any world history book. Any world history book. And Daniel talked about these things. And to me, the symbolism, you know, with the Medo-Persian, the Eastern Roman Empire, the Western Roman Empire, and the feet with the clay. Rome, its citizens got lazy, so they started hiring out their defense. And who did they go? Well, they went to the Franks, they went to the Goths and the Visigoths and the Vandals, and all these was a strength at the time, but later on it led to their downfall because they came stronger than the Romans themselves. So if you look at this, this is 603 B.C. when Nebuchadnezzar saw that vision. And Daniel, and still to this day, there's been no other worldwide kingdom of man. There have been some who tried. Hitler tried, Napoleon tried, Stalin, you know, they all tried, but there never has been one. And to me, that in itself is amazing. Then you get these little details, you know, the two, like, and then the 10 pagan tribes and then 10 nations that caused, and then you have a little stone that topples it at its weakest point and the whole thing goes to the ground. Verse 44. In the days of these kings, which kings is he talking about? The fourth kingdom. Fourth and last kingdom. In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. And when Jesus was here, what did he say to his, when Peter said, Thou art the Son of God, what did he say? Upon this rock I will build my kingdom, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. It's going to be the last world kingdom. No, it was faith, his faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. And this kingdom shall not be left to other people. When Babylon fell, who swallowed it up? The Medes and Persians. When the Persians fell, who swallowed them up? And when Greece fell, who swallowed them up? Rome. And the church is unique. No one will swallow them up. They shall be eternal. They shall be forever. Verse 45, For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, what does that mean? Came from God. You know, came from God. And that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. And to me, this is phenomenal. Can you predict who will be in power 10 years? Who will be on the rise? Who will be on the decline? Blah, 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 blah. No. No. But yet, God has it from, well, let's just say when this 33 AD is when the little stone was chipped out, and in the process of this failure began in 33 AD. So there's 650 some odd years. Then we go to the 7th chapter of Daniel and the book of Revelation, you know, all this, the 10 kingdoms, that was during the Reformation. I think the first kingdom that revolted from the Pope happened in 1521. So, a lot of history here. 2100 years at least, the very minimum of history, revealed as if it were nothing. Why? Because God knows the end as well as He does the beginning. And it's just awesome. It's just awesome. And I'll just give you some general information. The first great world empire was the Babylonians from 609 when the last remnant fell in 539. You know, they were raised up for a special purpose. How long was the captivity? 70 years. And the Babylonian empire lasted 70, 71 years. And then it fell in 539 B.C. The second great world empire was the Persian, Medo-Persian Empire, 539 B.C. to roughly 331 B.C. The third great empire was that of the Greeks from 331 to about 30 B.C. with the death of Cleopatra. When Alexander died, the kingdom was broken up and into four parts. Basically, there were three main parts. The Greek Anatolia Peninsula was one. The Seleucids, and what was the name of Epiphanes? I can't think of his first name now. And Antiochus Epiphanes. And that was the Seleucid, the Syrian Empire. And then the Ptolemies in Egypt. And that was the third. And these all fell to Rome in succession with the last, the first, the Battle of Corinth in 161 B.C. and then the death of Cleopatra finalized it in 30 B.C. And the fourth great empire was the Rome, founded by Augustus Caesar, the heir to Julius Caesar, 27 B.C. Began the period known as Pax Romana, lasted through basically the beginning of the church and the death of the apostles and so forth. In the West, it ended in 476 B.C. and 1453 A.D. So that was the image. In Daniel 5:30, another interesting thing. On the last night of his reign, Belteshazzar saw an image. It was a finger, and it was writing things on the wall. And so he asked what it was. Nobody knew what it was. Somebody said, Daniel, he's an interpreter of dreams. And he came in, and bottom line, you've been measured and weighed in the balance, and have found wanting. You know, you're a miserable person, basically. And he said that very night his kingdom was taken away from him. And Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And it's interesting, for a while, history, no one knew anything about Darius the Mede. We've learned a few things since then. Darius the Mede, and at this time, the Medes were the dominant. It's kind of like the American colonies to Great Britain was the way Persia was to the Medes. So they were the dominant. Darius, his has been identified as Cyaxares the second, who was Darius the Mede's uncle. So that's the connection there. When Cyrus married the daughter of Darius, Cyaxares, and the two kingdoms were merged into one crown. And history now mainly knows them as the Persian Empire. So what about Darius? There's a lot of recent things. Darius, there's a lot of kings in the Persian dynasties named Darius, or Darius is part of the name. Just like, anybody know who Gaius is? Gaius, Julius, Caesar, you know, he was Gaius Caesar of the Julian clan. And if you go through about the first 10 Caesars, they all had either Gaius or Caesar in their name. And this is kind of what they think this means. It means one who restrains, the prudent one. One ancient Greek scholar said Darius is a form of two words, first part meaning Lord, the second part meaning King. So Darius could be a title. It could be a surname, you know. Anybody know Luther? Well, most of you know me as Ed, but my name is Luther. My birth certificate says I'm Luther. So anyway, that's how those things come to be. This Darius has been found to be Cyaxares the second, the son and successor of the Median kings, and the uncle and father-in-law of Cyrus the Persian king, who held the empire of Media between his father and when he turned it over to the Persians. The prophecy of Daniel has unfolded in history just as it has been revealed over 2,000 years before it ended. Yes, Tom.
Captivity at that time, and yet in the 45th chapter of Isaiah, thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have hidden, holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will bless the loins of the kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before you and make the crooked places straight. In other words, God is going, he's going to bring these Jewish captives all back to Jerusalem. How's he going to do that when they're under control of all of these powerful people? And yet he works through Cyrus and is going to direct us all through Cyrus and through these kings is the way God works through that to bring these people back. And in the favor with Cyrus favors him by doing what God asked him to do all the way through.
And basically, the only reason Cyrus did it was because Jeremiah wrote about it, and he was astounded and said, let's go for it. That's how God works. Just a little
He even mentioned his name there in Isaiah.
Mentioned it by name.
45th chapter.
Exactly. There's another that's corollary to this in Daniel chapter 9. It's called the 70 weeks are determined for you and your people. Daniel was, because he understood what Jeremiah was saying about, you know, you'll be in captivity for 70 years because you missed 70 Sabbath years of letting the ground sit, so you're going to be in servitude for 70 years. So they were getting to the end of this time. Daniel was wondering, what's going to happen? What's going to happen now? And, you know, the angel came to him and told him, and he says, forget about the 70 years of bondage. I got another 70 weeks that's going to excite you. And so he had this, the angel told him his story about the 70 weeks. 70 weeks, Daniel 9:24. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city. To finish the transgressions, and in my idea, this is the transgressions of the Jews. What was the final straw for the Jews in God's eyes? They killed his son. They killed his only begotten son. To make an end of sins. When was that accomplished? When Jesus nailed our sins to the cross and to make reconciliation for iniquity through faith in his name. To bring in everlasting righteousness in the face of him who lived blameless according to the law, perfect and righteous in all things. And to seal up the vision of and prophecy, the end of one covenant and the beginning of a new. And to anoint the most holy. When was Jesus anointed? And what was his anointing? After his baptism by the Holy Spirit. And so that's what he's talking about, 70 weeks. A week for a year. And I don't want to go into that. We don't have time. But that's an acceptable. And you can study that. Why we use a week for a year. So there are 70 weeks times 7 days is 490 years. Know there and understand, verse 23, that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem, which happened in 458, the command to rebuild Jerusalem, 458, to until the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks, being 483 years. Let's see, I got a chart here somewhere, which would put it from, let's go on. And after the 62 weeks, the Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And the prince and the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. When did that happen? 70 AD. Who did it? The Roman Empire, Titus especially. And the end of it shall be with a flood and so forth. That's the way the fall of Jerusalem was if you read Josephus. So let's look at the years. From here, there would be 1 week, which is 49 years, which puts it to 409 B.C. These are years B.C. I shouldn't even have started this. You know what? Think about it. And we'll talk about it next week. Because I don't want to rush this, because this is awesome. If someone could tell you when he's going to send a Messiah and Savior into the world, to the day, to the year, wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't you have to say, I got to look into this. There's something behind that. And this is what prophecy is. We have what world history is going to be like. We have the date and time of the Messiah. You will be blown away at the accuracy of these. And I don't want to rush through it. And so we'll begin in 2 weeks. I won't be here next week. Dale is going to be here next week. The judges? Or what? Samuel? You're going to talk about Samuel for 1 or 2 weeks.